Let's get into our lesson today. We've been studying John, and as I started looking at it, I started coming up with this thought. I don't know if you know this phrase. There's one in every bunch. Do you know that one? There's one in every pack. There's one in every group. You know what I mean by that? Is if you get a group of people together, a group of friends, that there's always one who's just a little bit different. You know what I mean? You get a group of workers together, and it's the same thing. There's that one guy in the office that's just a little bit different. They see things a little bit different. They see the world a little bit different. You're picturing somebody in your head right now. Some of you are looking down the aisle. You shouldn't do that right now. But you're picturing that person in your head. And if you're not, you may be that person in your group, just so you know. That may be you, that the rest of them are going, yeah, you're the one that sees things a little bit different. But every group seems to have one. We do on staff. I'm not going to tell you really who it is. But there is one person on our staff that tends to see things a little bit differently. As you can see, this is our middle school minister. I'm not going to mention his name. That would be wrong. But I'm just going to point him out here, as you can see. I'd like for you to take notice of one thing in particular, and that's this right here is the tag. So this is his Christmas suit that he gets every year to go to Christmas parties, because this is what he thinks you wear to Christmas parties. And then he keeps the tag because he returns it afterwards. So that's Andrew. Everybody's got one. Somebody who sees it a little different. And when you start looking at the disciples of Jesus, and especially those folks that decided what they were going to do was write down their account of the life of Jesus, one of the things you start doing is you start looking at John and going, man, this guy sees things a little bit differently. I mean, it's not exactly the same as other people do. As a matter of fact, if you go and look at just the first line of each of the four Gospels, each of the four accounts of Jesus, you start noticing something pretty quick. For instance, look at the beginning of Matthew. This makes perfect sense, right? Matthew 1:1, it's the very beginning. This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah. It's a logical place to start. We're going to start out with going, here's where he came from, and here's who his father was, all the way back to the beginning. We're going to be able to trace logical sense. If you look at Mark, then you see the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah. Where does it start? At a very good place, the beginning. So he starts right there at the beginning. Then you look at Luke, it's the same way. Luke takes a very logical approach too, kind of a lawyerly approach, and said, many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that Jesus the Messiah did. That's what I'm doing. I'm coming up with this logical account. I want to show you this. And then you get to John. And man, John's different. He's just different. And you look at this and you go, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. You think to yourself, where is he coming from with this? What's John doing? What's he trying to do here? You start realizing that, you know, there's one in every bunch. There's somebody who always looks at it just a little bit differently. And in this case, I think it's the Apostle John, the disciple. And so one of the things that I wanted us to do was maybe take a look at why. There may be some reasons, and so I want to walk you through a little bit of John, and maybe you'll start realizing, and we can discover together, maybe why it started out a little bit different. If you would, I'm going to try and ask you to put your feet in his shoes there for a minute. You're a young man in first century Jerusalem. You're in occupied territory by an invading force of Rome. You're a fisherman because that's what your father did. And so now that's what you do with your brother. You're a young person and that's what your life has become. If you have a nickname at all or another name that you're known by, you're one of the sons of Zebedee. That's who you are. John, one of the sons of Zebedee, the second one, the younger one. And then in the midst of all of this, as you spend your time fishing, this radical rabbi, this guy who's turning things upside down, comes by and he says to you, hey, drop everything and just come with me. He didn't say where. He didn't say for how long. He didn't say where we're going. He certainly didn't say how this is going to end. But he just says, come on. And for some reason, you do. You drop everything you've ever known. Family, your job, your home, and you go follow this guy. And then you start to see these amazing things, these incredible things that he's doing. And you start to listen to him talk, and you hear him preach, and there's words that he's saying that you've never heard before, and things that pierce right into your heart in a way that they never have before in any way. You're still young, I mean real young, like maybe you're 14, that young, 14, 15, and you,
you settle in with these guys that follow this rabbi around, but you're amazed by what you see time and time again. As a young man, though, you do some things that are kind of immature. There's some things that you're probably going to look back on and really regret and be embarrassed about. Like the time you and your brother went to Jesus and said, hey, we kind of like a special place above the other disciples when you come into your kingdom. Kind of set us up. Kind of an end around on the other disciples. And then what's worse than that is then your mommy goes to him. And she asks if you can be set up in this place. I mean, when your mom's going to the boss, that's not good. That's something you're going to be embarrassed about. And then there's the time that you and your brother actually ask Jesus if it's okay if we call down fire from heaven to consume an entire village because they weren't very welcoming to us when we came. That's not going to get you invited to a lot of parties, I got to tell you. After that, you get another nickname. It's not just one of the sons of Zebedee anymore. This one's given to you by somebody else, your master, and you become one of the sons of thunder. And I don't know if that's really a compliment. Maybe every time you hear it, you cringe a little bit because of some of the things that you did. Some of the things that you saw are amazing to you. You can't believe what you're seeing. You got to see Jesus walking on the water. You got to see Peter walk out there to him and almost die. You got to see people who were lame get up and walk, and you get to see people who are blind, and then they're able to see. Later, you become one of Jesus' inner circle, and he shares with you things he doesn't share with other people. As a matter of fact, one of those days, he takes you up on a mountain, and he reveals himself to you of who he really is in a way that nobody else has ever seen. And I mean, when you view really his glory of who he is, it is so impactful that you're afraid you're going to die seeing it. You see all these amazing things. You see him cast demons out of people. You even cast demons out of people yourself with just your master's name. They flee. They run. With just the name of your rabbi and your master, you see these amazing things start to happen. You're there when Jesus enters into Jerusalem, and people are waving palm branches and they're singing Hosanna, and you're thinking to yourself, finally, finally they see what I see. And maybe Jesus is finally going to get his throne, and maybe in the back of your head a little bit, you're still wondering about that place of honor that maybe you and your brother will get. But you're at least seeing things moving forward. And then it all turns. Within a couple of days, it all turns. You see him arrested. You see him tried. And you see him crucified right in front of your eyes. And here's the amazing thing. You're probably the youngest one out of the group, and you're the only one there. All the rest of them have run. And still as a very, very young man, and you sit there and you look at the guy you've been following whose name could actually elicit demons to run and pull a man, Lazarus, out of a tomb after he's been dead. And there he is, he's hanging on the cross, and he looks at you as the young man and says, please take care of my mom, be a son to her. And you watch him die. And then they put him in a tomb, and then you're in a room, and you're in the deepest of despair, thinking everything I've been doing for the last few years must have been for nothing. None of this matters. I'm hiding in here like some sort of criminal. Then word comes that his tomb's empty and somebody saw him, and you take off and you run as fast as you can. Okay, Peter was faster, big deal, but you run as fast as you can to the tomb, and you get there, and when you see him, you see the resurrected Lord. He's actually there. You're there at Pentecost when you're filled with the Holy Spirit, and all of a sudden you have this power flowing through you that's not your own, but allows you to do these amazing things. And you watch the gospel spread. The story of Jesus starts going everywhere, not just with Jews, but actually faster with people who are Gentiles. And it starts spreading all over the place. And then people want to talk to you. They want to know because you were an eyewitness. And they're going, please, you were there. Tell us, what'd you see? What'd you see? What was he like? What was he like? You were there. And you try and put together words. You have so many stories. You even say yourself they could fill up many, many books. But you tell story after story. This is what I saw. This is what he did. This is what I saw. And everybody wants to hear from you. And they keep asking, please come. Please tell us what you saw. Because there's no written Bible. There's nothing for them to share yet. It's just the words of people that saw him. And you're one of those people. And after decades and decades of telling the story over and over again, orally, just saying it over and over, telling that story, you start noticing that your stories start to change a little bit. They morph. And they're not so much about the details and the historical facts, but they start to become more about, here's what Jesus meant. Here's what he was really talking about. Here's what he really was. So those stories start changing. Your friends write them down. They write down their accounts, and you look at them and you see them, but you're encouraged to do so, but not yet. Not yet. You still tell them. You become part of a church. You help father other churches. You're there and you're still sharing those stories. And finally, at old age, maybe 90, you finally decide, I'm going to get somebody to help me write this down. And so you sit on that one day finally and you're old disciple John. And you go, how do we start? What was he like? And you go, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. Because you see it all in such a different way now. After decades of still walking with Jesus, you see it so differently now. And so you started off with those words that later a philosopher, a Platonic philosopher, someone who followed Plato, would say that these words of John that start off this book deserve to be written in letters of gold. That's how beautiful and impactful they are. That's how much they meant. And it's because after so long, you've seen who Jesus was and you're trying to share it. Here's who he really was. Here's what he was really trying to share. This is what really mattered. I want to show you a little bit about this because John was constantly doing this. This is something that he did a lot. And I want to show you one of the ways that he did this. We're going to turn over to John chapter 4. And we're going to talk about a story of Jesus' encounter with a Samaritan woman at a well. If you don't know this story, Jesus is traveling with his disciples. And he comes into a village. It's a Samaritan village, which is a group of people that the Jews and the Samaritans don't get along with real well. And Jesus comes and he sits down at this well. And it's during a time when typically people wouldn't be at a well. And there is a woman there. And Jesus begins a conversation with her. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" For Jews did not associate with Samaritans. And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water that is welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, please give me this water, so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw the water." What you're seeing is what John so often did when he decided to write down who Jesus was. When he finally got his gospel and decided that he was going to get this down on paper in some way, probably with the help of a lot of younger people writing for him, but to finally get it down, one of the things that he was constantly doing was going, let me show you what he was really talking about. Every time people wanted to talk about a physical thing, Jesus would go, "No, it's a spiritual thing." And every time they talk about a physical need, he'd go, "No, you have a spiritual need." And what he's talking about here with this is a woman who goes, "Here I am and I'm drawing water and you're thirsty and I could give you this water." And he goes, "Look, here's the deal. You got a bigger issue than just physical thirst. You got spiritual thirst. And you can't quench it with what you're doing here at this well. There's no way that you can keep drawing this up that will do this for you. There's no way you can. Only I can do this for you. And I want to take this conversation and I'm going to turn it on its head and we're going to make this something spiritual, the thing that really matters. You have a spiritual thirst and that's what I'm really here for." And so often John would do that. He would show you those conversations. I don't know if he saw them when they happened that way, or if it took him decades of looking back and telling that story over and over again, and in reflection to finally see this is what he was really talking about. He wasn't talking about water. He's talking about spiritual water. When they were talking about bread, he wasn't talking about regular bread. He's talking about the bread of life. When he was talking about to Nicodemus about being born again, they weren't talking about through your mother's womb. He's talking about being born in the spirit. We talked about, people would talk about physical death, and he'd go, no, it's spiritual death you need to fear. And then he'd talk about spiritual, they would talk about a real shepherd, and he'd go, no, it's a spiritual shepherd. It's a spiritual life. It's a spiritual light. What I'm talking about are things that matter, things that last, things of a spiritual nature. And in retrospect, as old John looked back, he goes, that's what he was talking about. The stuff that lasted. And so instead of writing it down like a history book of what Jesus did, he wrote down, this is who he really was. This is what made us who we are. And this is what really mattered. It's a good message, that taking the physical and turn it into the spiritual. Because we need to hear that. We need to hear that. We need to have those conversations about things that are more than just the physical, the temporary. We got to have those conversations about the spiritual thing. Because here's the deal. In the world that we live in, the physical needs, desires, problems, they scream for your attention. They demand your attention. Constantly. You know what I'm talking about? I think you know what I mean. The way your calendar demands your attention. The way your job demands your attention, your finances, your home, your to-do list, your gym demands your attention, your school, your phone, it just demands your attention. Look at me, pick me up, you have to have me. And it screams loud because it has results associated with it. You got to get that job, you got to get that promotion, you got to get that retirement plan set up, you got to get that grade so that you can get that scholarship, so that you can get into that college, so that you can get that job. And it demands your attention, and it screams for it, and it insists upon it. And then quietly, the Spirit calls you in a whisper. And if you get so wrapped up, we get into this loop where it seems like all we're ever talking about is the things that don't last. And we never stop to look at and to talk about the things that will be here forever. Our physical selves crave physical affirmation and likes and a physical identity and acceptance. And we can't let our lives become that. The fact is, it's easier to do that. It's easier to have the conversations about physical world, physical needs is easier for a couple of reasons. One is because it's easy to measure your progress. That's one reason it's easier. And here's the other reason it's easier is because when you go to those spiritual conversations, you have to take a look at some stuff with yourself that you don't have the power to change. And that's hard. And so we tend not to do that. Let me give you an example of some ways that this happens. I'm going to use that deepest of all examples, television. So I wanted to show you something. I don't know if any of y'all have seen this show, but this show, This Is Us. How many of y'all watch this? Just out of curiosity. Okay, some of you do. How many of y'all have friends that bug you to watch this? Okay, there's a bunch of you. Yeah. Let me tell you, I've been going around and asking people about whether or not they watch this show, and the answer, whether it's a yes or whether it's a no, it has the same reason behind it. And the reason is because it is too intense. It is too heavy. Every week, there's some big thing that's happening that they're trying to figure out. And it gives you all the emotions and the feels and everything every week. And that's some people going, that's why I love it, is I watch it every week. And it's about things that matter, and it's about deep things. And there's other people going, I can't take one more thing like this every week. It's too much. It's funny, as I was asking people, one of the people I asked was Luke. I was going, do you watch the show? He's like, no, I'm rough and tumble. I don't watch this. Then I went through Lindsay's Instagram, and I just wanted to bring this up. That's the rough and tumble guy holding his something doodle. I don't know what kind of dog that is, but that guy's not too tough to watch that show. I can tell you that right now. He's not here. We can do that. But anyway, that show is one of those where what it is it's about deep conversations every week. And here's a little spoiler alert. If you haven't watched this show before, let me give you a little bit of an idea. It's about three siblings, and you see them throughout their life. Sometimes they're adults, sometimes they're kids, sometimes they're teenagers. And what usually is happening is there's some issue or something going on as an adult. And then they have a flashback to a time that they had a conversation with their folks or with their siblings or with somebody else about it that affected them to this day. There was something that happened, a conversation that was more than just about what we're having for dinner. It was something that actually in some way helped shape who they are, that made them part of who they are at that time. Every show seems to have something like that in it. I want to show you a clip from it here in just a second, give you a little setup. One of the siblings is African-American man. His name is Randall. He's adopted as one of, and becomes a triplet with two other siblings. He's a grown man, and he comes to this point where he's trying to figure out exactly who he is and what his identity is. And then he has this flashback to this moment when he was a child. I want you to watch this.
What are we here to build, boys?
Body, spirit, community.
The three pillars. Now, before we begin, we have a new member to initiate today. Randall, come over here. Fathers. Randall, how old are you, son?
9.
9 years old. Fine age. Do you think you have a good life?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. Good. I hope you always have a good life. But as you get older, you might start to find that things get harder. The world isn't always a kind place. Especially for men like us. Take a look at the people on this mat. We are your community. When things get hard, we are going to be the ones who hold each other up. As Randall's father, you are his foundation. Come lie down, as if you're going to do a push-up. Randall, climb on your father's back. Jack, your back was built to carry your son through life. Are you willing to hold him up no matter what comes his way?
Yes.
Show him. Good. Now keep going. Are you willing to raise this young boy into a strong man?
Yes, sir.
Are you willing to push him to be the best man in the world he can be?
Yes.
I doubt if young boy Randall had any idea of the significance of what was happening right then. But I'll tell you, on that episode, if you watch a little later, 38-year-old Randall understood a lot more of what was happening at that moment. That this was about something deeper, something that would last a little bit longer than... It wasn't just about how strong his dad's arms, how strong his dad's back was. That this moment that went deeper than that was actually about, for him, was actually more about his identity and how his father saw him. And that shapes us. Those sort of conversations shape us. Now, I'll give you a little contrast. How many of you ever watched this show? Watch that show before? Yeah, there you go. So this show has as its tag and kind of one of its famous mottos that it's a show about nothing. You hear that? It's a show about nothing. That they're in contrast to This Is Us, this show never has any impactful or meaningful conversations at all. And they're excellent at it. It went for 9 years, never having one meaningful conversation. As a matter of fact, the very first conversation in the pilot, episode 1, and the very last conversation in the finale, at the end of the finale 9 years later, is the same conversation. Started off with this conversation, ended with this conversation. You remember what it was about? Ah, there's somebody who knows. Seinfeld trivia. It's about a button. The second button. They start off the show and they end the show with Jerry noticing that, hey, your second button on your shirt's in a bad place. It's up there in no man's land. It's too high. You can't button it. If you do, it'll cut off to where you can't breathe. And it's too low where if you leave it undone, it looks like you're trying to show off your chest. That's a bad place. That's a bad button. First conversation, last conversation. In between, millions of meaningless conversations. And it's fun to watch. So what am I saying? Am I saying if you watch Seinfeld and not This Is Us, you're not a spiritual person? Yes. That's what I'm saying. No, I liked them both. I liked them both. But here's the thing. In our life, the conversations that sometimes we can naturally tend to go towards are the Seinfelds and not the This Is Us's. And by that, I mean the things that scream for our attention. The physical things of this world. Our physical desires, our physical hungers, and our physical thirsts. And they will scream for our attention and they will demand our attention. And we can get stuck in this loop where we never talk about the spiritual matters. We never talk about the things that make us who we are. The things that make us us. And we don't get to them. We've got to find some way to spend some time talking about these things that last longer. That's what John, I think, was pointing us to with Jesus so much. We've got to find ways to do that. Parents, let me talk to you for just a minute about this because I feel very convicted about that. We have got to start with our kids having some spiritual conversations from the time they are little bitty. They've got to be taught this. They've got to be shown this, and they've got to be guided in this. We've got to start off with these conversations that are more about than what we're going to have to eat and where we're going and what we're doing at school. And I know it's hard because I know those kids are going to get a little bit older and things will get hectic. I remember when my kids got into middle school and high school and the conversations seemed to be about how are your grades and how are we going to get you to practice and what did you do for your homework and what do you have for your extracurricular activities and do we have anything in the house to eat that we can give them as we run? And my wife and I would have conversations that seemed like for days and all they were us comparing schedules with each other. Who are you picking up and when? And when are you going to be able to get them? And can you get off work at this time? And I can't get them. And how are we ever going to make a trip to the grocery store in between all of this? And how's your job? And how's your grades? And all of these conversations, and they take over. And let me tell you, when we don't have a foundation of spiritual talk with our kids, then they get to that spot. And when the world hits them right square in the chest, they don't know where to go. We've got to have that foundation with them, where we can talk about things that matter more than that. Because look, here's the deal. Our kids are learning from us our priorities. They're learning what really matters. And let me tell you, a God that comes after our talk about extracurricular activities and after we talk about your grades and after we talk about your scholarship applications and after we talk about what college and after we talk about a job and after we talk about our money, a God that comes after those things, to them, isn't a God worth following. He's just not. Why would you? If he's an afterthought after these other things, why would I follow him? We've got to have those spiritual conversations with our kids. We got to raise them on spiritual conversations. You got to be able to talk to them about what God's done in your life, how you're changed, how you're different. You're not the same as you used to be. You got to tell them what God means to you, and they got to be able to hear that. And let me tell you, spouses, you will never be closer to your spouse than when you're talking about your relationship with God with them. When you pray with your spouse, when you get to hear her talk to her God and go, here are the things I'm really afraid of, here are the things I really worry about, here are the things that I'm concerned about, you'll never be closer. We got to find a way to do that. I want to tell you, we want to help you with this. It's a part of our vision. It was something that we put in there that made us kind of come up with this more than us, more than here, was that what we don't want is for any conversations you have about God, about Jesus, about your spiritual growth and your spiritual life, just stay in here. It can't. This can't be the place where your spiritual life resides. It can't. It's got to be going out there. And one of the ways we want you to do that is to go talk about stuff that is more than just the details with your spouse, with your kids, with your friends, with your coworkers, with your small group, whatever it is. Find a way to talk about things that actually last, the things that impact us, the things that make our identity, the things that make us us. It's what God thinks about us. And so if you look at the back of your bulletin right now, one of the things that you can see is at the bottom, we're giving you some spiritual conversation starters. If you haven't done this, there's nothing to be ashamed about, but you need to start. You got to find a way to start doing this. And I'll tell you, there's some conversation starters here for your kids. It starts off for your children, for your teens, for adults, for you to have with friends, for you to have with coworkers, something like that. My favorite one's the first one, and it's on all three of them. What does God think about you? I'll tell you, those of you that have little kids, when you take them and you put them in bed at night, and maybe you tell them a story or you sing a song or you say a prayer, this is a good question to start with. Sweetie, do you know what God thinks about you? And at first, when they're little bitty, they'll start going, yeah, he loves me. And you go, that's right. He loves you. He doesn't just love you, but he sings over you. You give him joy. He actually takes great pleasure in you. That's what he thinks about you. So does mom and dad. And then as they start getting older, that conversation will open you up to more conversations. What does God think about you? He loves me. That's right. You want me to tell you how he loves you? This is what he did. And then as they get older and they start having those hard times, they go to school and the other kids are mean and they start pushing them down and they come home and they feel like crud. They don't like the way they look and they don't like the way that they think and they don't like anything about them. And that's the time you go, yeah, but what does God think about you? Because that's what matters. And then when they get to be adults and they leave your house and they're out on their own and they get out there and they face some really hard stuff and they don't know what to do with it, that's the time that they have in their head because it started at the beginning. Yeah, but what does God think about me? Because that's what matters. That's what lasts. That's what makes me who I am. We got to find ways that we can kickstart those conversations. So please take those with you and use those as you go this week.